Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another episode of Learning Insights. I'm your producer, Kevin Finn, and we have a guest host in the studio with us today. We have Trellis Usher. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
And we have Leanne Langford actually stepped up, and she's on the mic today, so she's here.
Hi, Kevin.
Well, the guys are out in Raleigh, North Carolina, doing a trade show right now, so we are here with you lovely ladies, and just welcome to Learning Insights. I'm glad to have you guys on.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Definitely.
Thank you. I'm happy to be talking to you, Kevin, instead of Stone and Lee, and I'm going to tell them I take it personally that they're not here today.
Definitely. Well, they're a little intimidating, so it's going to be a better show without
it
them.
It depends. Uh-oh. Okay. We'll take that.
So do you guys do anything interesting this weekend?
No, I kind of just worked this weekend, and when I had a couple of minutes, I kicked back and watched some movies, spent some time with the family. What about
okay.
you?
I went to Birmingham, Alabama to hang out with my girlfriend's parents, so that's always an experience.
Fun. Was that the first time?
No, it's definitely not the first time. But it's funny. We have an apartment together, and we live together, and they know that. But when you go to their house, they have a separate bedroom always set up for me.
Absolutely.
When you're a father and have a daughter, you'll get it.
Yeah.
So my son played in a Magic tournament this weekend.
Okay, I play Magic.
Magic the Gathering, and those go really late. So, and I have to drive because he's not allowed to drive. So my daughter and I dropped him off, and then we went and ate dinner. Then we went and played miniature golf.
Wow.
And then we played more miniature golf, and then we finally went home, and I let her lay down, and then I had to pick her up asleep and drive back out to pick him up.
You probably had to go out. I think there's a place in Alpharetta, if I remember back in
that's
the day.
That's where we went.
I think it was like Super Games or
that
something.
That was
okay,
where we
yes.
went.
Yes, so that's an interesting experience in subculture altogether.
Wow.
Well, Trellis, who do we have in the studio today with us?
Well, we want to say thanks again to our friends at Training Pros, and thanks to Leanne for being here with us. And in the studio with us today is Stephen Sharp. He's the manager of instructional design team over at CBeyond. And so he's going to be here talking with us today. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks, Trellis. Glad to be here.
Good. So we're going to, and Stephen and I actually know each other. So I spent some time over at CBeyond. And so this is a treat for me to actually be able
so
to.
So I don't have to pretend like I don't know you?
No, you don't. You don't. We can know each other on the air, too, as well as off the air. So
and tell our audience who put you down at CBeyond.
Yes. We're all one big happy family
just
here.
Just shameless plugs.
Right. Leanne was responsible, actually, when I stepped out. So it's going to be interesting today for our show. Stephen's going to talk to us a little bit about going from an entrepreneurial model back into corporate America. And it's interesting that at the end of 2011, I stepped out of corporate America to go start my own company. And so one of the first engagements that I had was with CBeyond. And that was all in part due to Leanne Langford and Training Pros, who, so yay, do we have like an applause track?
So we have a lot in common.
We do. We have a lot in common. One big happy family here. So
actually, it was interesting when I was preparing for this. All the research that I found on the web was about people that made the same transition that you did, going from corporate America and wanting to start their own business.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really find anything relevant about someone who, you know, had their own business and wanted to go
back into
corporate America. So I thought it could be interesting to talk about.
I definitely think so. I think folks are going to get a lot out of it. So again, Stephen Sharp here with us today. And Stephen has about 15 years of experience in L&D and working in instructional design, everything from classroom facilitation to developing learning strategies, doing needs assessment. So he's going to talk to us a little bit about what he does, but also about what we've just been talking about, making that shift from going from entrepreneur back into corporate America. So we will go ahead and jump right in. Is that okay, Stephen?
Sounds awesome.
All right. So you work in corporate America now, but you started out as an entrepreneur. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay. I mean, and give me some kind of signal if I'm giving irrelevant details. But so in 1996, I had financed a master's degree in counseling psychology on my credit cards. And
oh, wow.
I had no idea how I was going to pay for it, but I got this master's degree, decided I didn't want to do that because I couldn't make any money. And a friend of mine said, you know, I'm sick of listening to you complain about being in all this debt. He goes, you need a second job. Come and work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So he owned this software training company. So I went and worked for him. And, you know, so I don't, you know, tell you the million minute version of the story. I started being a software trainer, and this is when kind of Microsoft Office was being trained kind of in the late 90s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
that kind of started to get trained out where everybody knew how to use Microsoft Office. And I kind of led the transition of the company from being kind of an applications trainer into kind of a Salesforce automation training company, and then finally kind of into an e-learning development company.
Okay. All right. And so that was the start of sort of your entrepreneurial beginnings to pay for the master's degree that you had financed on the credit card.
Well, I paid for it in the first year, actually.
Okay.
So after that, I just really loved – I mean, I think I found inadvertently found my passion.
Right.
And I love learning and development and love training. And I feel really fortunate that I think nowadays people either have the instructional design expertise or they have the classroom facilitation expertise. But I feel really fortunate that I was able to be a facilitator. Well, we called them trainers back then.
Right. Before we got so sophisticated.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll try to use the current words. So I feel really fortunate because we were a small company that I got to write the training, and then I got to see how the student – or we called them students back then, not learners. So I got to see how the students reacted to the training that we developed, and you got to constantly improve it and modify it. So I feel really fortunate that I had that experience.
Right.
And I do feel now being in corporate America where there's an instructional design team and there's a training team – and you write the training, and you teach the trainers how to deliver it, and then you almost never hear from it again. You move on to your next project. I feel like I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage to kind of see what, you know, how it's being received in the classroom.
Yeah, that's good, because one of the questions I was going to ask you about was how do you think working at that software company as an entrepreneur has prepared you for this corporate role? So sounds like there are a lot of overlap where you see things that, you know, benefited you there?
There's things that prepared me, and there's things that in a way, I think, work against me a tiny bit. When you – and I'm sure you know this now that you have your own company – everything, I don't want to say everything is about the dollar, but every dollar you don't spend is a dollar that you get to keep. And in corporate America – every dollar that you don't spend is a dollar you don't get next year.
Yeah.
So I think that when I look at inefficiencies, I don't know that other people in the department are looking at the same inefficiencies because their budget is their budget and they have to spend their budget or they don't get the same budget next year. So that's one thing that I have to kind of just bite my tongue and figure out a creative way to say. The thing that I really like, though, about where I came from was – I had to kind of figure it out first before I knew what all the theories were. So at the end of the day, what I think I did in the beginning was I followed kind of more of a backward design approach as opposed to the ADDIE model. And we just kind of talked about, you know, what do we want these people to be able to do when they leave the classroom?
Right.
What kind of experience do we want them to have?
Right.
And because we were training applications, we were training computers – we really our company really believed that people perceived their computer back then as a barrier to being able to do their job. So what we tried to do is kind of break down that perception that the computer was a barrier.
Right.
And the things that we did to break down that barrier was make training fun, engage the learners, put games in there, put competitions in there. And these are all things that are kind of current in the field of learning and development.
Right, right.
So we had to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we had this woman who had a master's in instructional design, and she was a contractor for our company, and she would just roll her eyes at me because I didn't know who Bloom –
Bloom's taxonomy.
I didn't know who Bloom's taxonomy was. I didn't know who Kirkpatrick. I didn't know what multiple intelligences meant.
Right, right, right.
And so she was able to, but she agreed that we had an excellent product.
Right.
So she kind of came in and she was kind of a broken record. And she kind of talked about Bloom's and talked about Bloom's and talked about Bloom's. And eventually I got to see how the taxonomy applied to the things that we did.
Right, right. So being an entrepreneur and sort of starting out in a field as a new person to training, not really having that foundation of who all of these people were and what all the methodologies were, mm-hmm. Had to get ramped up and learn that. What do you think in terms when you fast forward that to 2013? Do you think that learning functions are as focused as they need to be, sort of on the theory behind some of what we do, or now with the computer being more of an enabler to learning? So we've got mobile, we've got, you know, tablets everywhere we go. We're trying to figure out how do we make sure that we can give people training at the point of need and give them access to it 24/7. So the computer, while it's an enabler, can also be seen sort of as another barrier or disruptor, so to speak. How important is it, do you think, to be grounded in some of those things like Bloom's and Kirkpatrick to make sure that we're working on the right things?
I actually think, you know, I don't want to necessarily get into this, but I've seen, I think the ADDIE model, you can do everything right in the ADDIE model. You can ask all the right analysis questions, you can do a perfect design, you can develop to your schedule, and you can implement it, and you can still miss the mark.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I think to a certain extent, you have to figure out what the experience is that you want to have if you're sitting in the classroom and be aware of all of this stuff kind mm-hmm. of in the background, mm-hmm. but just create the experience that you want to have in the classroom.
Right.
And at the same time, I think Bloom's levels are the things that resonate with me the most. I think adults have to have some kind of pre-learning or readiness training. Mm-hmm. They need to have a training event, and there needs to be some kind of reinforcement. And I think that you need to focus on the knowledge and comprehension in the pre-learning. Mm-hmm. You need to focus on the application in the training event.
Yep.
And then you can get to the higher levels after the training. And I think if you understand that, mm-hmm. I think you can create an effective learning program.
Okay. Great. So good. So tell us a little bit about, you were at CCT Solutions, and so what prompted you, what was compelling about CBeyond? Why'd you leave CCT to go over to CBeyond?
Well, first of all, I went to CBeyond for a lot of reasons, but and this is not obnoxious or me being, like, conceited or anything, but whenever we put, like, a contractor at Coca-Cola, they would always pick up the phone and say, oh, they did this, or, oh, they, you know,
yeah.
And I was like, but whenever we put me on site, you know, they were always happy.
Right.
So we kind of lost a lot of our big businesses in 2007, 2008 for various reasons. They were purchased, you know, moved to Chicago, whatever. So this opportunity, a 3-month contract became available at CBeyond, and I said to the owner of the company, I said, Chris, why don't you let me go and take the contract?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know they'll love me.
They'll love you, yeah.
And
they did, and they do.
You know they'll love me, and we'll turn CBeyond into our next big client.
Okay.
So my 3-month contract kind of turned into 6 months, then turned into 7 months, and okay, we can make it for 9 months, and then it turned into 12 months. And over that course of time, and kind of what I wanted to talk about today, that was my first foray into corporate America, and there were so many things that were so different about working for yourself that I really, really loved and that were really great for me. And at the end of that 12 months, after being business partners with this guy for so long, and best friends, he saw it as a betrayal that I wanted to do it. So it was kind of a big break for me. But went to CBeyond. I loved the set schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that people expected you to be there at 9 in the morning, but I could get there at 7:30.
Wow.
I loved that every day at lunchtime at 12 o'clock you were expected to take lunch, and I could work through my lunch and I could leave early. I liked that for the first, until I was a manager, I left my laptop at work, never brought it home, and never did any work while I was at home.
It's starting to sound compelling again, isn't it, Leanne?
Wow.
Yeah. Where does that happen? Right.
But the other thing I found out that I really liked about it, I had turned into this guy who didn't like anything except work.
Mm.
I had no hobbies. I had nothing that I enjoyed except working.
Yeah.
And because when you're, and I'm sure you're going to experience this, Trellis, when you're a small company and somebody offers you a contract and it's $5,000 or $10,000 or it's this or it's that, you think it's going to be the last contract you're ever you're ever offered.
Right.
So even if you're at capacity, you're going to accept that job.
Yeah.
And that means that that weekend or that month or that whatever, you don't have time to meet friends for dinner. You don't have time to accept an invitation a week from now because you might have to cancel.
That's right.
So for me, I got to turn into this guy that liked to do things again.
Yeah.
And I got to figure out the things that I used to like to do that I had forgotten about, like playing tennis or reading. Or so it's been good for me.
Great. And you bring up some very interesting points, because I think that, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, once you've gone so far in your career, sort of the next thing that you want to do is go off and work for yourself, do some independent consulting. But it does. It comes with all of those things that you just worked about. You never know when the next contract is coming. And so if you get one on the table, you're trying to figure out, okay, I'm already working 70 hours a week. Can I squeeze or eke out another 10 or 15?
Or can I get this person to work underneath me?
Absolutely.
And I modify their work. They're not quite, you know,
right.
they don't have the skill set, but I do, but I can modify their work and I can have the meetings with the customer.
Right. I'll do all the client interface piece, but I'll have somebody else, another consultant kind of helping me out on that vis-a-vis training pros.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's what they do.
Leanne Langford.
Yes.
You know, all these things you're saying are really resonating with me, because this year I've made it a goal to take actual days all the way off, like, you know, like a Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, don't open the computer on a Sunday. And the first day I did it this year, I was so bored. I said, what do I do?
Right.
What do people do with time off?
When they have it. Right.
I realized it's me that's boring.
Right. Well, that you have no life, right?
I'm
it's
just
like
all
what
about
you were
work.
Saying. If you're all about work. That's exactly right. And so I think, you know, and you raised another good point, because as I'm out here now as an entrepreneur, as a small business owner, and I'm interacting with more people who are entrepreneurs themselves, there's this fear that, you know, if you go back into corporate America or you came out of corporate America, somehow you're sort of selling out to the man. It's like you've got to stay as an entrepreneur. And so I think, but all the challenges that you talk about, it's part of that. That people may not recognize. They may just be thinking, oh, I'm going to leave and go start my own thing, and they don't really know what that means.
There were other things that the corporate America thing was great. One of the things about, you asked me about CBeyond.
Mm-hmm.
CBeyond has a gym. It's kind of like a large private training studio, which is nice. It's fully managed. But because they spend so much money on it, they fully encourage you to work out while you're at work.
Day.
So going back to kind of getting to work between 7:30 and 8, you know, eating your lunch at your desk, you have your workout done while you're at work. So when you leave the office, you've already exercised, you've already done all of your work.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go home, if you don't have anything to do and you're twiddling your thumbs, well, that's kind of on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to kind of develop some interests and develop some things that you enjoy in life that are aside from working mm-hmm. or your friendships, or you need to have some hobbies.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're such a work-oriented, performance-driven culture now. It's hard for people, like Leanne was saying, it's hard for you to think about, okay, what else do I like to do? Mm-hmm. What did I do before I started working so many hours?
The other thing I did, this is totally off the topic, but it might be interesting, you know, when I was late 20s or early 30s, I didn't watch TV for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and I went back to that about my TV broke, and I just didn't hook it back up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can stream TV now from the web, so you can still get it if you want it. But to me, the TV, living alone, it had a very drug-like effect, where you just go home from a day and you tell yourself you're going to do all this stuff, and you find yourself just laying on the sofa, not even remembering what you watched. So I don't have that to fall back on as kind of a crutch.
Right.
So ultimately, the thing that I love about corporate America is that you're expected to have a personal life when you're not at the office.
Right.
And not having TV is, you know, that panacea or the drug thing.
Right.
I've had to really make an effort to, you know, develop some interest.
Well, I think that's good for you, though, that you've been that intentional about it, because I know people, even myself, when I was in corporate America, even though it provides that structure mm-hmm. of a work day and you being able to get in early, I would still find myself bringing work home, though, or bringing the laptop home over the weekends. Mm-hmm. So what was it that sort of prompted you to just to be really intentional about not letting the work come home with you? Or because from your entrepreneurial days, that's probably all you did. So that could have been your default position, right? Was just to pick back up and start working just as hard as you did when you were out on your own. What did you do to sort of put up some?
I'm just really honest. I made a lot more money back then.
Yeah.
So I felt like the salary that I was making, I was expected to give it 100% or 110% during the workday. But I thought that would be kind of abusive for me to, at the same time, take my laptop home mm-hmm. and give more of myself. Yeah. So it was something that consciously I didn't do.
Yeah.
Another thing that I did since joining, this is also off the topic, but it's kind of related.
You just have to know Stephen, folks.
But I had this lifelong dream of wanting to write a book, yeah. and I've tried like a million different times to do it, and I finally figured out that I just needed some professional help. So I hired a book consultant. Her name is Bonnie Daneker, and I signed this contract with her. So another reason that I don't bring my laptop home is that I have the schedule that I have to stick to kind of writing this book.
Writing the book, yeah.
And I kind of consider that a hobby, even though I don't know if everyone would consider it a hobby. But so I kind of put it back into that category of why I like See Beyond is that I know that I can invest time in something that's important to me.
Yeah. Okay. Good, good, good. So I think, too, yeah, that just probably subconsciously your entrepreneurial thing kicked in where, you know, you think about your time in terms of billable hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about, okay, you know, I'm going to give it 110% while I'm there for the workday, but once I go home, that's sort of it, you know, because they're not paying me enough to kind of be billing 80, 90 hours a week. So I'm going to give it my best while I'm there, but I'm not going to overdo that.
And I don't, the flip side of that is I think if you want to be promoted and you want to be on this track to mm-hmm. advancing the corporate ladder, which part of me does, I think that those kind of things are necessary at times. But I don't know. I mean, yeah. I would prefer to stay. I don't say I leave at 5 or 5:30 every
right,
day.
Right, right, right.
You know, like Friday night, I left at 6:45, and I was there at 6:30. So yeah. I'm not saying that I don't work long days.
Yeah.
But when I leave the office, I leave the office.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you.
Thank you.
Very healthy.
Yes. We have to learn how to do that. You need to teach a class. Come up with a course on how you do that.
Okay. Yeah.
So it sounds like corporate is better for you personally for a lot of reasons. It sort of allowed you to rediscover some things that you were interested in before, pick up some mm-hmm. new hobbies, work on your book and things mm-hmm. Like that. What would you say are some of the challenges or things that you've had to get used to being in corporate versus being a small business owner?
Okay. Again, you all would have to know me, but when I ran the consulting company, I'm not saying I was a genius, but I think I think I was kind of perceived as the absent-minded professor genius of the that didn't necessarily talk in corporate speak and didn't, you know, go to somebody's manager instead of going directly to their direct report.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the way that communication happens in corporate America and the way there's precedences and protocols of when you go to a manager and when you CC someone on a message and and make sure that you say, "Hi, Joan," before you just jump right into the email. And if someone doesn't reply to your email, that you go into your sent items and you find the one that they didn't reply to
right.
and you forward that one. I mean, I didn't know any of that stuff
right.
because, you know, you're moving like really yeah. fast when you're – and you would just say, "Hey, I need you to do this."
Right.
You know? So that was really
And they're like, "How dare you? You're not my manager." Right. "Who are you?" Right.
So that was really interesting yeah. to me.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really interesting to me, and I refuse to do it, is that...
You heard it here, folks.
I think that the lexicon of words that are used in corporate America, like we have to use the exact same word to describe certain things. So there's kind of like this... like brainwashing that happens that was different for me,
yeah.
You know, that, you know, it's kind of all that corporate speak, you
right.
know, it's like you have your buzzword bingo when you go to, you know, see some speaker and you're
right. check them all off.
Yeah. So, but I'm actually doing it a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, so just at times.
Right.
But, so that was, way too many meetings. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Way too, you know, you sit in so many meetings and I'm thinking to myself, okay, that person makes $40 an hour. That person makes this. That person, okay, this meeting cost $800.
Yeah.
You know, what did we get out of that? So
right.
that's kind of the entrepreneurial
exactly.
thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
So those are some of the big challenges.
Wow, wow. And they're all interesting. And me coming from corporate and going out to business for myself, it's kind of the reverse. It is. There's a lexicon that small business owners have, and it's sort of, you know, not – keeping myself from getting in my own way because I'm trying to follow some sort of bureaucratic communications strategy instead of just going straight for who I need to talk to and what I need to know. So,
right.
yeah, so I think it can be challenging both ways. Great, great, great. So based on your experiences in L&D, what advice would you give or takeaways do you have for corporate L&D functions to help them be more nimble? Because I think, you know, quiet as it might be kept, inside of corporations, I think they could use a bit more of that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, we talk about intrapreneurs and how do you bring that mindset inside of a large bureaucratic organization to help them become more nimble to responding to customer needs and how they operate and do business. What are some lessons or maybe even things you've tried to implement on your team that have helped to do that?
One of the things that was fortunate for me, I did a lot of work at Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And Coca-Cola, I would say, they were really kind of on the cutting edge of kind of using technology and using SharePoint. And I got a lot of experience with SharePoint.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started at CBeyond, SharePoint was a shared document library. You know, that was this team's SharePoint site or that team's SharePoint site. So one of the things I brought to corporate America was designing the share landing page of either a product or the team site kind of more like a web page,
mm-hmm.
you know, making it more visually appealing, making, you know, we talk about above the fold. So everything that's kind of important kind of on the screen
mm-hmm.
When you can see it. The left navigation bar so that they can access things or the quick launch bar. That was one thing that we boosted traffic by huge numbers by having information accessible. And it kind of goes back to what you were talking about before is that we have mobile devices, we have tablets, we have this, we have that. At the end of the day, if you have the resources, I think you do some kind of pre-learning, you do the training event, you do some kind of an assessment. And then if you could, you repackage all the information in some kind of HTML format where in the training, you show them how to get back to that information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always ask people, the last time you wanted to learn how to do something, how'd you do it? And when I want to learn how to do something, I go to YouTube.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, I want to, I don't know, hang a drape, you
right.
know? And you get to see a video of someone teaching you how to hang a drape, and it's 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
I think I think video is not an expensive commodity anymore like it used to be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if I were to recommend anything, I think that I did some research. I think you can buy like a green screen or a green curtain for like $150, $200. You can get a flip camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the company should look at creating their own little video studio
yeah.
and trying to figure out how to take what they're talking about in an hour and put it out as a little 5-minute video.
Right.
And then let the details exist somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that we're doing at CBeyond is we're trying to look at podcasting
right.
and trying to reach our learners, you know, when they're driving to work mm-hmm. or when they're driving in between appointments
right.
or creating a way for them to be, I don't want to say entertained, but engaged in the material rather than stuff being kind of talked at them.
Right, right. Yeah, I think YouTube is probably one of the biggest and most successful social learning experiments that I've ever seen. And I'm surprised that more companies and people aren't really understanding the power of that. And it happened really organically, right? It's, you know, people just started creating it as this thing. It used to be a lot of crazy videos like mm-hmm. Charlie bit my finger. But now it's really the go-to place where when you want to learn something. Everybody talks about how they go to YouTube if there's a new task that they want to learn. And right. so I think you're right.
Do you know of any companies that are using YouTube for training?
I don't know of any that are using YouTube specifically for training because, you know, you've got the firewall issues in corporate and, like, again, a lot of these barriers that come up. And so people are so afraid that, you know,
somebody else is going to see what they're doing.
They're going to see their IP and they're going to, you know, figure out what's in the secret sauce. And, you know, people are going to get on there and say the wrong things. But I think that's probably where the learning function can start to be helpful is that you can curate. You can have some role in the creation of that content. But if you have other people in the organization who know processes and products and things better than people in the learning function, we'd have to go interview them and sort of pull it out of their brains anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just let them create the video?
Right.
And then you just pop it out there. So
right. So kind of like a dream I have for CBeyond is that we kind of have our own little talk show mm-hmm. where you bring the product managers in, you bring in the senior leaders, you bring in successful sales reps that have made the transition to selling new products.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a little kind of like this, but yeah. it's a video. It's like a talk show, you know. It's The View,
right.
and it's just a conversation.
Absolutely.
And I think it's just a more current way to think about how we all want to learn.
I think so too. I think I read a couple of years ago that Sun Microsystems or somebody was doing something like that,
mm-hmm.
A podcast or a video show or something. So some of the technology companies that you probably would expect to be cutting edge and, you know, mm-hmm. so CBeyond probably would be a lot more open to ideas like that than some other companies might. So, yeah.
So when I was doing the research for that, they said that you could buy like those 12, you know, those you know those lamps those spotlights that have like the clamps that you can like clamp to that
right,
cost like
yep.
$12
mm-hmm.
that you get at like the hardware store. They said you could use those as your spotlights.
Okay.
You know, of course, you would never see them on camera.
Right.
But I read like a bunch of articles, and I actually saw some YouTube videos about how you can set up your studio for like less than $1,000.
Yeah.
And so I think it's definitely an opportunity.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You mentioned Coca-Cola, and so when we were there when I was there in the learning department too, that was one of the things that we did. We had a person who loved videos outside of work. And so, you know, we bought a couple cameras. He showed us how to use them and set them up. We bought a green screen and we probably took a room that was maybe 15 by 15 and that became the studio. And we shot a lot of the video there, leaders, you know, talking about various training initiatives or reinforcing certain processes. We'd superimpose all the logo stuff over it later and edit the audio. And we could create it there versus spending $25,000, $35,000 to shoot
right.
a couple of minutes of video.
Right.
And don't dismiss your podcasting idea because you have a lot of mobile sales reps.
Right.
And
absolutely.
I can tell you that I spend a lot of time in my car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I like to listen to things that are going to improve me.
Absolutely.
And I think that they would too if it's going to affect their bottom line.
Right. Absolutely. If you're in the car 8 hours a day and, you know, driving to, you have to see 50 different
right.
doors in a day.
Yeah.
You can either hear the same song 25 times that day on the radio.
Right.
Or you can listen to something that's going to improve
that's
you a bit.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So that goes back to kind of being more creative and strategic with how we get, you know, the information to our audience.
Great, great. Well, Stephen, it has been a treat talking with you and seeing you again after a little bit. So give our listeners your contact information. How can they reach you if they want to benchmark with you, find out what you guys are doing at CBeyond University?
Email Stephen, Steven, .sharp, Sharp, at cbeyond.net.
All right. So thanks again, and thanks, Leanne, for being here as always.
Thank you, Trellis, for hosting today.
Wonderful. We'll have to tell Stone and Lee that I did a great job.
You did an amazing job. I think I'm going to replace him. I've been looking for a replacement.
That wasn't my idea, guys, so if you're listening somewhere. So thanks for joining us today on Learning Insights. It's been a pleasure. Thanks again, Kevin. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 10 o'clock.
although we style.